You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
Yeah. What's up, Wildcats? This is the Saul Bookman Show live from the Vivid Seats studio. Man, I'm so excited to be a part of Wildcat Radio, the newly rebranded Wildcat Radio 2.0. Man alive, I have so many people to thank. Thank you to Bryant and the rest of the Wildcat Radio crew for welcoming me in to this new podcast. And thank you to everybody out there on social media for reaching out to me and congratulating me on this new endeavor that I'm venturing out on. So let's get started by, first of all, I need to explain something to everybody out there, and I think it's always important to find out what the origins are of your U of A fandom. So I'm going to tell you mine. I used to live in a small city town called Cordis Junction, Arizona. You guys might know it. It's that last stop before you turn off to Prescott or on your way up to Flagstaff. And back in 1987, 88-ish, my mom took me to Walmart. And I walked into Walmart. There was two racks of coats. It was freezing cold outside. And there was a rack of ASU coats. And there was a rack of U of A coats. I decided, you know what? I want an ASU coat because all my friends are ASU fans. And so my mom, bless her heart, Christmas Day, she gives me a gift. And I open it up and it's a U of A jacket. And at the time, I was so distraught. But it was freezing outside. So the following school day, I wear my jacket to the school bus stop. I get on the bus, and immediately everybody turns against me. In typical ASU Sun Devil fashion, they all turned on the U of A guy. And from that point on, I decided to own it, and here I am. It's been a beautiful, beautiful next 32 years, a national championship in 97. And many, many other great memories. I finally got my bachelor's and master's degree from my beloved school. So I bleed red and blue just like the rest of you. And I'm so excited to get this started. So let's hit the field.
Uh-oh, that ball's on the ground. That is a free ball. And it's picked up by Washington for a touchdown. Picked up by Brandon Wellington.
Down in Tucson, Arizona had a great opportunity to make a statement in the Pac-12, make a statement to this fan base, and more importantly, make a statement to themselves that they were able to compete with an upper-tier team such as Washington. A team in Washington that's not as good as it has been in the past, but is still a solid and fundamental team. And you can't make mistakes against them, and it was clear the separation in the two football squads, who was the more fundamental, more solid, and maybe you could even say more talented overall, as the Huskies just dominated this game. And, you know, it started right off the bat. You know, Arizona just looked like they were unprepared, especially special teams-wise. Offensively, they were sluggish. But you can get over a sluggish start, but getting a punt blocked and then muffing a punt return, it just was not a good start for Arizona. But despite that, They were able to come back and really establish themselves, and they had the lead going into halftime. And you think maybe the worst is behind them, and this could be something to where they can springboard forward. That was not the case. In the second half, it just got worse, and Arizona, we're going to break this down. Offensively, they just did not look like they had a good game plan at all. The offensive line, let's start with the offensive line. They weren't able to really stop the UW rush at all. They weren't able to stem the tide at all. There was a lot of pressure coming up the middle. Khalil Tate was not handling that at all. And that was kind of the beginning of the end, so to speak. I'm not going to put the entire thing on Khalil Tate in this game, but Khalil Tate was a very large part of this failure by this U of A squad. We'll get to him in a moment. When we look at the second half, the defense couldn't get a stop. 4 of 5 drives to start the second half, UW scored a touchdown. 28-3 by the time we hit the 9-minute mark of the fourth quarter. That just cannot happen. 38 points in total in the second half. It was 17-13 going into the half. The final score, UW had 51 points. Are you kidding me? That's unacceptable at every single level. The run game wasn't as effective as you'd like. There were some flashes. J.J. Taylor had a couple nice runs. Nathan Tilford came off the bench and had a couple nice runs. I thought Nathan Tilford actually provided a spark when the Wildcats needed it most. It just, unfortunately for them, it seemed like there was a moment right there where Arizona's going to stay in this ball game, and they started to develop some momentum on the offensive side of the ball. And then that unfortunate MJ Tapisi injury for UW, inadvertently stopped the momentum for Arizona. And when they came back, they had a series of bad plays and had to settle for a field goal. And that was the only 3 points that Arizona would have for a while. And that's where I think this game really, really turned on its head. Because at that point, UW was up by 10 points. They score a touchdown, Arizona's only down by 3, and we're talking about maybe a different ball game. But instead, they settled for 3, and UW just continued to score touchdowns. And you just can't do that against a really solid team like that. You just can't. And you also can't turn the ball over 4 times.
I said earlier this week at the press conference it was going to come down to really 3 things. Turnovers, right? And penalties, and special teams, right? So you can't play a team of that caliber and turn it over that many times, have a punt blocked, and all the things that happened in the first half and to still be ahead was really, based on that, was a miracle, right? Our defense held up and kept them because we gave them short fields in the first half and kept them to field goals, but we couldn't respond in the second half. And still the turnovers, you just can't play anybody and turn it over that many times and expect to be in a competitive game.
4 times. And, usually when we're talking about turnovers, and especially that many turnovers, we're not talking about fumbles. But this team had 3 fumbles on the night. Khalil Tate had one of the most egregious fumbles of all time, just simply throwing the ball backwards and giving the Huskies a free touchdown. When it comes to Khalil Tate, I know you have to take the good with the bad. But his good is so good, and his bad is so bad. What do you do with him? What do you do with him at this point? Do you continue to play him? Does this team really have the confidence in him that he's going to show up each and every day? Because you really can't tell. If he can't run, and yesterday, for whatever reason, he looked like he was really hesitant on running, then he's largely ineffective because he doesn't have the greatest of accuracy. He's not the best thrower. He's got plenty of arm strength, but he just doesn't have that innate quarterback ability to sit in the pocket and pick you apart. He just doesn't. He never has. Every time he dropped back, seemingly, he would reverse field and go wide right or wide left, and he would get into trouble. And that happened over and over and over again. There was several times where he could have stepped up in the pocket. and he could have, you know, made a throw, but instead he ran into the defense. So it's a combination of the offensive line not doing their job and getting blown up at the point of attack, and Khalil Tate not really recognizing where the weakness in the defense is, especially when it comes to his offensive line and the defensive line pressure, the blitz schemes that the Huskies were running. They came with various safety blitzes, which Kevin Sumlin said they did not see on tape. And, you know, they surprised Arizona. But still, you have to make adjustments. You have to move on. And I do not believe the Wildcats were able to do that at all.
No, I think it was a great message for us, you know, just to wake us up and, you know, like a little reality check, you know, just to remind us that, you know, we have to play all four quarters every game. You know, we can't take any games off or any quarters off. So we just got to be better as a whole. You know, I think we'll do a lot better next week.
I will say this. I think one of the things that concerns me the most about this team is the leadership portion of it. And I think defensively, they've got some leaders. They got some guys that want to step up. Offensively, Khalil Tate's supposed to be that leader. And in his postgame comments, something really struck a nerve with me. And it is when he said that this was kind of a reality check, you know, a wake-up call for this team. You know, they can't just show up and play and expect to win. We all realize the magnitude of this game. I don't think this was considered, you know, one of those games where, you know, it's an upset alert. You know, Arizona wasn't the favorite. They just weren't. So I don't understand how you could think that this is a reality check or a wake-up call. That tells me that you guys didn't come in prepared. That tells me that you had a different impression of where you are at as a program instead of the reality of where you're at. And that is just not acceptable. You know, this reality check, you know, a lot of these players, sometimes they use these buzzwords and, you know, and they think, you know, if I say this, I say that, you know, I'll get the media off my back and then we'll move on to the next thing. And that's all well and good. But sometimes I just want to hear you keep it real. And, you know, Khalil Tate, he needs to own this loss because it's in large part because of him. You know, he made a lot of bad decisions out there. You know, and there's plenty of blame to go around, all the way around, from top to bottom. Coach Sumlin says that they got outcoached, they got outplayed. That was clearly visible on the field. At what point do we stop letting this just kind of slide by, you know? And I think as a fan base, I think we're all frustrated. I think there is plenty of people out there that would love for U of A to be a dominant program, and they are very frustrated that they are not. You know, you look up the road at ASU and it seems like they're on the right path. And, you know, they've had some big wins, you know, Michigan State on the road, Cal on the road, you know, and they just beat Washington State at home in a thrilling victory. And that's kind of where I'm going to take this with Khalil Tate. As a senior, as a man who is supposed to be the leader of this team, this is his fourth year now at the University of Arizona. Are we ever going to see the leadership qualities in Khalil Tate that we need to see? When you have a kid up the road who's a freshman, and a couple weeks ago he was put in the position to beat Colorado in the fourth quarter, and he made some mistakes and they fell apart and they lost. That was their first conference loss up at ASU. And then you fast forward to this past weekend, and he's put in the same position. Under 2 minutes left to go, they have the ball, chance to win the game, and he drives his team down the field and he wins. And this is a freshman. And you can see that those players on that team truly, truly buy in to the hype of Jaden Daniels. And I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is going to be all that or anything like that, but I'll say this right now. He's got that team believing in his abilities. And I don't know how many U of A players would say that they are 100% confident about Khalil Tate on a, you know, trusting the fact that he's going to show up every single game. I'm not sure how many guys you would say that behind closed doors. In front of us and in front of the media, they're going to say, you know, they're always going to give their support. But how many of them truly believe that when, you know, us as a fan base, we can't trust that? You know, and again, I don't care what you do in practice. I don't care how great of a person you are off the field. I don't care what you do in the community. We're just talking about football. And the only thing that matters is what you're doing on the field. And what I'm seeing from his abilities and his leadership and the way he, you know, carries himself, his body language, I don't know if we're ever going to get the Khalil Tate that we all hoped we would get. Regardless of how frustrated you may be, just understand that, you know, things could always change. And with this team, they seemingly always do. So if you decide that you're going to want to go on the road and maybe watch the Wildcats down in Los Angeles as they take on USC, or if you want to watch them in Stanford, or if you're going to wait for them to even come back home against Oregon State, download the Vivid Seats app, and you can use promo code OVERTIME in the Vivid Seats mobile app to save up to $100 on all ticket purchases for first-time customers only. Pretty good deal. So, you know, we have a lot of hope, and speaking of hope, one of those teams that gives us hope every single year is our beloved U of A men's basketball team. So what's good on the wood?
Love you when you was in beast mode. Loki thought you was a cheat code. Know that you shoot for the cheap hoes. Shoot any work like you freak those. Know you see my pockets deep, so you flexing ain't really a thing, bro. We both could be working at Kinko's. And Kobe, when you them rings don't owe. Nursery rhymes spitting, small cars sitting.
Oh. The U of A men's basketball team had Pac-12 Media Day last week. A lot of storylines, obviously, with this new team. I think the number one storyline is, how good is Nico Mannion going to be? Will he be the next great U of A point guard? I think that's the major, major thought on just about everybody's mind. But there are other storylines. Let's start with Nico. The kid is uber talented. He's got athleticism. He can shoot. He seems like he has a very high basketball IQ. I've seen him both in person in high school up here at Pinnacle, and his demeanor on the court tells you a lot about the person he is. He's a leader. He seems like he's a leader. And that's encouraging. That's an encouraging sign, because I think for a while, it was leadership by committee. And a lot of those times, because the freshmen were so young on these teams, they just didn't have that leadership quality within them to really take everybody to another level. And I'm hoping that Nico Mannion is going to be that guy. The comparisons obviously are natural when it comes to him and Mike Bibby. Both of them were superstars in the high school level here in Arizona. Both of them were McDonald's All-Americans. But I think the major difference is Nico Mannion is more athletic than Mike Bibby was. You know, Nico Mannion is a much stronger and physical and athletic kid than Mike Bibby was at the time. Now, we all know Mike Bibby is super yoked up right now, but back in, you know, when they were 18 and 19 years old, that was a completely different story. And I think that's a testament to Nico Mannion and his work ethic. I also think that Nico Mannion can be one of the true great point guards in U of A history. With that being said, man, I do think that we need to temper expectations just a bit. There's a part of me that maybe I have a little PTSD when it comes to former freshmen that were highly touted coming in, and maybe they just didn't live up to the hype as much as we all hoped they would. I'm hoping that Nico doesn't fall into that category. I think we build a lot of hype on these kids when they come in, but what I saw in the red and blue game, what I've seen prior to then, gives me a lot of hope for the future. But other than Nico, at the guard position, who is U of A going to go to? Who is U of A going to count on to help out Mannion in the backcourt? You have Baker, who may or may not be eligible. You have Dylan Smith. You have Max Hazard. And obviously, there's no Brandon Williams this year because of a knee injury. Man, there's a lot of question marks with that backcourt. You know, we know what we're going to get with Dylan Smith. We're not going to get anything too, you know, outside of his realm of possibility. He's going to give you maybe 10 points a game. He's going to play hard. He's going to make some boneheaded mistakes. We all know this. But he's a decent defender out there, and he can do his part to at least stem the tide out there on the court, especially as a senior. He's got a lot of leadership qualities now, being the old head on the squad. Baker's the one that I am really intrigued by, and let's hope that he can become eligible. We all know how the NCAA is with these matters. They can take a few weeks. They can take a few years. And right now, with the tenuous situation with U of A and the NCAA, who knows what's going to happen. But if Baker is eligible, man, that is a dynamic backcourt. Probably, I would say, one of the best backcourts in the country to tag him along with Mannion. It's going to be an amazing, amazing backcourt. You know, Baker reminds me a lot of, he's got a little Lyons in him, a little Mark Lyons in him. He's got a little Kevin Parham, it seems like. But in addition to that, he also seems like he's got a little bit of, you know, some leadership within him. And he's a bulldog, it seems like. So I'm excited for him. And the guy that I'm probably most high on is Devonair Dutrieve. In that red-blue game, it looked like all of a sudden he went from a 3- or 4-star prospect to a lockdown 5-star prospect and a guy that could probably, you know, help win you some games. He did so last year. Remember Oregon State? This year, man, if the jump he makes resembles anything like the jump he made in the red-blue game, man, I am very, very much excited about that kid. Hopefully, he's got everything situated within himself. I know he was having some doubts as to whether or not he should stay here or not, but he's here. He came back. I thought that was a smart decision and a very mature decision. I think we need to give him credit for making the smart and mature decision. I'm not saying smart because he came back to U of A. Smart because he was going to leave because he thought he was going to go to a better situation. And he realized how good he had it at U of A. He came back and he did what was in the best interest of not only him, but also the team. And the team needs him. He needs the team. And so we move on. Josh Green. I think if it's not Nico, then you're excited about Josh Green. Am I right? Josh Green has got so much athleticism. He's had a couple shoulder injuries and surgeries, but he's back. And he looks every bit the part of a dynamic player. Time will tell how good he can be. And I will always do this from now until the time this podcast ends. I will always try to temper expectations. I'd rather have my expectations low and the reality shoot high than vice versa. But outside of Josh Green, who else is going to help him? We know what Ireley is by this point. He is going to give you a lot of energy. He's going to give you some bounce off the bench. He's going to be excited. He's going to play hard. But can Ireley find that next level, that calmness within a game that tells you that they can be dominant at any given point in time? I think that's what separates the great players from the good players. Good players, you know, they give you these bursts, but they're not so consistent with it. And you don't ever see them like get into a lather. It just seems like, you know, it's like a burst in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes in this specific half, you know, 5 or 6 games in, and then you don't see it again for a couple games. Whereas a great player will give you that burst maybe once, maybe twice, maybe 3 times a game. And that's what separates the great from the good. And I wonder if Ireley is going to be able to take that step and get to that great status. You know, a lot of U of A players have started off slow and developed towards the end and made a big jump. Can Ireley make that jump? I don't know. Zeke Nnaji, don't know what you're going to get from him. Long, athletic. Stone Gettings, same thing. The transfer, he's going to give you some outside shooting. He's going to be able to give you a body down low. But will any of these guys make a significant impact to where you have to pay attention to them on the floor? I think that's the biggest question mark with this team. Defensively, I think this is, if not the longest, it's one of the longest teams that Sean Miller has ever had here at this school. It's tremendous all the way from top to bottom. The length that this team has is insane. They have length at every single position. Defensively, they should be much, much better. Probably, it's not hard to say that they should be the best team within the last 3 years, because last year's team wasn't very good defensively. The year before that, even with DeAndre Ayton, they weren't very good defensively. The year before that, decent defensively with Lauri Markkanen in them, but still, it's been a while since the TJ McConnell days where the U of A squad was really dominant defensively. And I'm looking forward to seeing if that can come back to Sean Miller's, you know, resume, because it's been gone for a while. So, you know, a lot of great things to look forward to. And then obviously you have the anchor with Chase Jeter. Man, you know, Chase, again, kind of along that Ireley mode where he's going to play hard for you. He's going to give you a lot of energy. He's the leader out there on the team. He's going to lead by example. Can he stay healthy, number one? Number two, can he be enough of an offensive threat to really make a difference out there when times are going rough? Can you rely on him down low in the post when you need a bucket? You know, who's going to be that bucket guy? Is it going to be Nico? Is it going to be Josh Green? Is it going to be down low with Chase Jeter? We don't know. Last year, he had his moments. He was good here. He was bad there. A little bit of inconsistency. Solid defensively. But overall, you'd like to see him make a big jump offensively because I think that's where he's going to make his biggest impact this season. Man, it's hard to believe it's October already. College season is just heating up, and my bookie is giving me more reason to get in on the action. Not only your point spreads and totals, but my bookie offers in-game wagering so you can track the action and movement as the games take place. Game props, playoff odds, Heisman odds, and national championship odds are all available too. And that just scratches the surface. We've teamed up with MyBookie this October to give you this great offer. Sign up at mybookie.ag and use promo code OVERTIME and they will match your first deposit. Again, promo code OVERTIME and new users get their first deposit doubled. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. And before we go, one last thing that I usually like to do, give you a little nugget. If you haven't been able to get down to the school, to the campus, and take a look at the new things going on around, you know, I like to try and bring you something to look out for. And one of those things is the Student Success District, which is, it's pretty massive. It's modifications to transform the main library, the Albert B. Weaver Science Engineering Library, Bear Down Gym, and they're also building a new four-story student success building into an interconnected district that will empower generations of students. That's pretty crazy. Outdoor patios and, you know, some zen areas along with some walkways that will connect all the buildings together so you don't have to cross the street or go down to the sidewalk, I suppose. It just makes it a little easier to get around. These are unique spaces that will be for everything from collaboration to meditation, according to their website. The construction has already started. It's pretty amazing. This stuff really moves at a quick pace. In addition to the rest of the campus, if you haven't seen the west side of the campus over there by a university and right behind General Benz and all that, man, there are some massive renovations going on over there. New hotels, new high rises for student housing. It's pretty crazy. So this Student Success District is supposed to be done in 2021. Construction has already begun, and if you've been down to a football game, you can walk right by and see it. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty cool. And so that's a little nugget. I want to thank you all for joining me on the very first episode of the Saul Bookman Show here on Wildcat Radio 2.0. Thanks again to everybody for taking the time to listen, and we'll see you next week.